Greetings, welcome. It is Eric Erickson. It is my show, and I am glad to have you with me today. I really am. It is Wednesday, and I hope you got better weather than I do outside. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I want to begin with an explanation of cryptocurrency, and I'm stealing from NerdWallet largely because NerdWallet is a great financial resource, and it will do a better job of explaining cryptocurrency than I will. Cryptocurrency is a form of payment that can be exchanged online for goods and services. Many companies have issued their own currencies, often called tokens, that can be traded specifically for the goods or services that the company provides. Think of them as you would arcade tokens or casino chips. You'll need to exchange real currency for the cryptocurrency to access the good or service. Cryptocurrencies work using a technology called blockchain. Blockchain is a decentralized technology spread across many computers that manages and records transactions. Part of the appeal of the technology is security. Now, we're really talking Bitcoin here. It's the most common of the cryptocurrencies. There are a number of others. Essentially, a cryptocurrency is an algorithm. The Bitcoin algorithm, for example, you use computers and you use typically graphics processor cards on computers because they do extensive mathematical computations very quickly. And you run this program and you try to mine, quote unquote, mine new coins. This algorithm comes up with a select number of coins. This algorithm matches you to an integer that translates into a Bitcoin. You know what a prime number is? A prime number, 1, 3, 5, 7. What's the next one? 11, 13. The further out you go, the further and further there is risk space. But a prime number is a number that can only be divided by itself in one. So 1, 2, and 3. 2 can only be divided by 2 or 1. 3 is the same way, but 4 can be divided by 2. It can also be divided by itself in 1. Therefore, it's not a prime number. There are algorithms that essentially give you what are effectively prime numbers. I'm really simplifying this down so that you get the basic understanding of it. And if you find that number that represents a Bitcoin, it's yours. And you put it in a so-called digital wallet. And there's a currency conversion where you can sell it and get dollars for it. There are lots and lots of digital currencies out there. The reason people like them in particular is on the black market. Because they're supposedly secure, they're not really as secure as people claim, by the way. But people claim they're very secure. So on the black market, there's a thing called the dark web. The dark web, you cannot get to the dark web on your internet browser. You have to have a special web browser, and the special web browser reveals the dark web to you. It's about 10 to 15% of the web is the dark web, and you do not want to go there. Bad things happen on the dark web. You can get your computer hijacked on the dark web, but you can also buy drugs, sex slaves, illegal items, explosives, dabble in child pornography. The dark web is the dark web for a reason. It is a bad place to go. But for a while there, on a lot of college campuses and in tech companies, people who wanted hard drugs and could not otherwise get them would go on the dark web, and you could get meth, cocaine, marijuana, whatever, sent to you from someplace in Sweden or Malaysia, allegedly of good content, and you would buy it with this cryptocurrency that is not traceable by authorities and therefore is used to places. You send in dollars over the dark web, the Fed's going to track it. You send Bitcoin, they can't track it. So Bitcoin became the currency of illegality on the dark web. And now there are other of these as well, cryptocurrencies. The problem here is in the real world, in the non-illicit drugs, child pornography, anti-human trafficking world that you and I live in, how many of you actually use cryptocurrency to buy anything? I'm not talking to you libertarians. I know some people who do, and they're very nice people and will readily acknowledge that they are the fringe. But in the mainstream world, how many of you use cryptocurrency? Probably very few of you. Here's the problem. A growing number of young men in particular and middle-aged men who used to be day traders are now crypto traders and investors. inspired by Elon Musk dabbling in this and promoting it online, people are making money and losing money in cryptocurrency. So, as you can imagine, the federal government is set to try to regulate cryptocurrency. There are a couple of things here. First of all, I have bought, I think I still have a little bit of Ethereum, which is a cryptocurrency. And I have held on to it. It's gone up, it's gone down, it's gone up, it's gone down. And I just, you know, I figured I would buy a little bit of it. But here's my rule of thumb, and it goes back to Warren Buffett's rule here. I don't really understand it, so I don't invest in it. And I've had well-meaning, smart people try to explain Bitcoin and blockchain and the like to me, but they will get far more wealthy than me because they're clearly smarter than me. But I don't understand it, and so I don't want to invest in it. And if I don't understand something, I don't want to invest in it. One, I couldn't explain it to myself, let alone to my wife or someone else. Why are you investing in this? Well, I have no idea. To me, it sounds like tulip bulbs. You know what was the 15th or 16th century? The Dutch had a tulip bulb craze. An old friend of mine, William Carswell, gave me a book one time. He insisted I read it. It was years before I finally read the book. He was on me forever, and I wouldn't read it in large part because he insisted. I finally read his book on tulips. There was a tulip bulb craze in the Netherlands, in Holland, and it swept the world, and people were selling tulip bulbs. You could buy a house with a tulip bulb. It was insane, and the market, of course, eventually crashed. And a lot of people, a lot of investment, a lot of capital were wiped out. Well, reports have been coming out recently that, and again, it is mostly young men, are buying houses with cryptocurrency. Well, I shouldn't say they're really buying houses with cryptocurrency. They're getting loans using their crypto account as collateral. My favorite is there are people who are borrowing money against their crypto accounts to buy more cryptocurrency. That's my personal favorite here. We are in unstable, uncharted, crazy times. And you got people throwing money in every which direction in ways I don't understand. I'm not the most conservative investor, but I'm way more conservative than these people. And here's my personal concern. I'm afraid that people are hurting themselves and don't even realize it. People think they understand cryptocurrency and they don't. I mean, for example, a whole lot of people have embraced the claim that cryptocurrency is untraceable. The government can't touch it. And yet they can. Now, here's part of the problem with Bitcoin is that someone, and no one knows who, owns a pile of Bitcoin. And if that person were to sell tomorrow, it'd crash the Bitcoin market. But nobody knows who it is who owns it, which is a little bit fishy. Nonetheless, the government is reading these stories about people getting out of hand with their cryptocurrency. And the Republicans and Democrats alike, on a bipartisan basis, now wish to regulate cryptocurrency. Here are a couple of thoughts here. One, they're doing it because the behaviors have gotten more and more risky, fueled by Wall Street bets and the like on Reddit, people going crazy with crypto. But two, the government doesn't understand this stuff. I mean, I barely understand it, and I try to understand it. And the guys on Capitol Hill, the geriatrics on Capitol Hill who don't even understand how a mouse works with a computer and can't program their VCR think they're going to be able to pass a law that regulates it. Here's what they're actually going to do. Is they're going to write a law that allows the FTC or the SEC or somebody to regulate it, and you're going to get a bunch of bureaucrats involved and screw up the whole process. I'm not opposed to cryptocurrency. I find it a little shady, but I'm not opposed to it. I do think it's not really a currency. Now, those of you who are into it will disagree with me, but I don't think it's really a currency. Why do I say that? How many of you out there are using it to buy or sell anything? Can you go to McDonald's and buy your hamburger with cryptocurrency? Can you go to the bank and readily withdraw it from your account? Can you pay your bills with it? The power company, is it going to accept your cryptocurrency? Can you go to an antique store and hand the guy crypto to buy the vase you want? The vase. No. The only people I know who use cryptocurrency are using it to buy other cryptocurrency, or they're using it to trade back and forth with people who use cryptocurrency, or you got the people who are on the dark web buying illegal narcotics. that's not really a currency in the grand scheme of things. It is for you if you're in those markets, but most people aren't. It doesn't have widespread support or appeal. And the government going to regulate it is going to make it even more problematic. And I'll tell you who's really concerned about it. The Chinese. They want to create a cryptocurrency and ban all the other cryptocurrencies. Because they don't like the fact that there are currencies out there that can fly in the black market and not be traced. The Chinese want information. They want to be able to follow everything around. But there's a larger picture here. As I dazzle you with my limited knowledge of cryptocurrency, there's a much bigger problem here. And it goes back to the people who are using their cryptocurrency to take out loans to buy houses or buy more cryptocurrency. They are themselves destabilizing the market, and it goes beyond them and cryptocurrency, but that's what Congress is focused on. There's a lot of moral hazard in the market right now. Congress has created a lot of it by the constant bailouts of big businesses, some of whom should have gone bankrupt. We have not allowed the creative destruction of capitalism to take place. One of the brilliant ideas within the free market is the creative destruction of the free market. Someone comes up with an idea. Someone comes along with a better idea. The first idea goes bankrupt. The company that came up with it crumbles because they failed to innovate. And then a new company comes along, picks apart the pieces and builds something even better than the second company. And the second company goes bankrupt, or the third company winds up buying it. And you improve and reiterate along the way through the creative destruction of the marketplace. And that's not happening right now because company A, that has a derelict idea that they can't innovate on, gets a government bailout. And so they get to continue to consume resources and capital and maintain patents and intellectual property that prevents further innovation. Our entire market system is being destabilized by this, and something wicked this way comes in the markets. It's only a matter of time. Now, the markets this week, I think, are doing better than they were last week. There are some glimmers of hope that maybe inflation really isn't as bad as some people say. Oh, it is. I got an aside for you here in a minute. But all of this stuff is having a destabilizing effect on our economy. And I can see us headed towards another financial crisis like the 2008-2009 situation, because you got some people out there with Bitcoin who are making risky bets on it. You've got a bunch of government regulators who want to regulate it who don't even know what the hell it is. And while everybody's focused on that, you've got all the stuff happening in the market that's insane, that shouldn't be happening. It's a profoundly destabilizing time. And you got a bunch of people with 401ks who are going to be holding the bag, and what's the government going to do with it? And oh, by the way, before you say government bailout, we don't have the money. That's Joe Manchin's concern with the infrastructure bill. We don't have the money, and if we keep printing money, we're going to spark inflation. There is this theory, this new monetary theory, that we can just print all the money we want in the world and we're not going to cause inflation. But if you actually get into the theory, what the actual theory is, what is it? Philip, you know what it is. It's the new money theorizing that the left has embraced. And if you actually read into the theory, even they believe that there can be inflation, but they just don't think we're anywhere near causing inflation. Essentially, there are two schools of thought. The modern monetary theory, that's what it is. Thank you. Modern monetary theory. So modern monetary theory, MMT, believes that we are in a dark hallway. You cannot see in this hallway. And there is a hole in the floor that you will fall through. Modern monetary theory believes that that hole in the hallway is so far down the hallway that we can keep walking down the hallway of printing money and we will be fine in perpetuity because the hallway is so long and the hole is so far down at the other end of the hall. Regular monetary theory that has survived since Adam Smith and everyone has realized is actually real says that the hole in the floor is way closer to us than we realize. And if we don't stop printing money and actually start storing up our finances pretty soon, we're going to fall into that hole. The question is, where's the hole in the hallway? Everybody agrees we're walking down a dark hallway towards a hole. I suspect that the people who do not embrace modern monetary theory, the non-communists of the world, are right. And if so, the cryptocurrency people and the printing press, printing money press people and the making risky investments and moral hazard people are leading us ever closer to that hole. And the whole thing's about to collapse on us. And all of us, particularly those of us who have 401ks in our mid-40s, so we have a ways to go to retirement, we're going to be dealing with the cleanup. This hour of the program brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan. They want to help your business become an even bigger business. If you need access to loans in the six-figure range, call them. Actually, go to firstlibertyga.com. You can get their contact info, reach out to them, spend 10 minutes with them. See if they're a good fit for your business and your business is a good fit for them. FirstLibertyGA.com. Thanks to them for their sponsorship. Let's go to the phones. Brock has been waiting patiently. Brock, welcome to the program. How are you?
Pretty good, Eric. How you doing, man?
Great.
I got a quick question for you. I'm kind of rewinding the tape, going back to the previous hour, and you touched on this, but the political elite, you know, everyone knows we've always had, you know, the political elite. We've always had career politicians. But it seems like when in the past 15, 20 years, at least in my knowledge, that, you know, where I've become self-aware of it, is something has changed. You know, the status quo has changed. Something has shifted to where they've become more emboldened, you know, with the rules for thee but not for me type mentality. And I don't know if it's, you know, like as a reason because of coronavirus or things like that, you know, you could take XYZ issue and capitalize on it, but something's changed. And I wanted to get your thoughts on why you think the political elite have become more emboldened in this day and time versus previous generations.
That's a great question. I've got a couple of conflicting thoughts that are hard to sync together. One of those thoughts is, in some cases, not all, it's not that they have become more emboldened. It's that we're now more aware of it, thanks to the rise of independent media, the rise of the internet, the rise of social media. We are now more mindful of the fact that this is who they have been. That's for some of them. For others, it's a little more complex. There are a group of people, I believe, who are in charge who have given up on the United States, who think that our best days are not before us, even though they're expected to say it. And they're cashing in for themselves and their family and friends while claiming the mantle of helping the people. They've just given up. That's a separate group of people. I think there is a third group of people who have been able to get away with it in large part because the people themselves don't care. We as a people have begun to lack discernment. And so we elect people who tell us they love Jesus and babies, and they go to Washington, D.C. and fund Planned Parenthood and whore themselves out, and we're not paying attention, and we've gotten played. And once they're entrenched and can fundraise, they can shut out the competition. So I don't think it's any one answer. I think it's those three and probably other as well that have allowed this to happen. And then, of course, there are congressional districts out there with a bunch of rich white people who are atheists, frankly. They're secular, and they view themselves as elite, and they've lost touch with the rest of the country. And they watch the mainstream media, which itself has lost touch with the rest of the country, and they don't think you and I really exist or aren't worth taking seriously because we're not on MSNBC or CNN. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. I got to play you some audio. This goes back to yesterday, talking about getting involved in running for office, particularly for school boards. There is an account on social media called the Libs of TikTok. And it highlights the insane progressives on TikTok. For those of you who don't know what TikTok is, it's the Chinese surveillance system that has induced young Americans to make short videos to entertain each other as the Chinese collect massive piles of data on these Americans. You thought Donald Trump had banned China from having a role in TikTok, but actually the regulation was delayed and now the Biden administration has gotten rid of it altogether. So the Chinese still own this elaborate surveillance system, And they know by listening to videos like this that they've got us, that we're weak and vulnerable and can be beaten. Here now, a teacher. This is a teacher on TikTok. This video captured by the Libs of TikTok account.
I made a comment on one of Miss April's recent videos about PBIS, in which I stated that PBIS is white supremacy with the hug. And a lot of y'all wanted to know more about that. So here we go. First of all, thank you to Jack Copa, who reminded me that Dina Simmons was the first to coin this term. So thank you, Jack, so much. So if PBIS concerns itself with positive behaviors, we have to ask ourselves, okay, well, what are those positive behaviors? And it's things like making sure that you're following directions and making sure that you're sitting quietly and you are in your seat and all these things that come from white culture. The idea of just sitting quiet and being told stuff and taking things in a passive stance is not a thing that's in with many cultures. So if we're positively enforcing these behaviors, we are by extension positively enforcing elements of white culture, which therefore keeps whiteness at the center, which is the definition of white supremacy.
I hope your head hurts as much as mine. This is a white male teacher on TikTok wearing a shirt, "When they go low, we go teach," who claims, well, you know what? Let's just listen to this again together so you can get it.
I made a comment on one of Miss April's recent videos about PBIS, in which I stated that PBIS is white supremacy with the hug. And a lot of y'all wanted to know more about that. So here we go. First of all, thank you to Jack Copa, who reminded me that Dina Simmons was the first to coin this term. So thank you, Jack, so much. So if PBIS concerns itself with positive behaviors, we have to ask ourselves, okay, well, what are those positive behaviors? And it's things like making sure that you're following directions and making sure that you're sitting quietly and you are in your seat and all these things that come from white culture. The idea of just sitting quiet and being told stuff and taking things in a passive stance is not a thing that's in with many cultures. So if we're positively enforcing these behaviors, we are by extension positively enforcing elements of white culture, which therefore keeps whiteness at the center, which is the definition of white supremacy.
PBIS, positive behavioral interventions and support. PBIS, positive behavioral interventions and support. It is a teaching routine to encourage positive behavior. Now I'm going to read for you from Wikipedia. Positive behavioral interventions and support is a set of ideas and tools that schools use to improve the behavior of students. PBIS uses evidence and database programs, practices, and strategies to frame behavioral improvement in terms of student growth and academic performance, safety, behavior, and establishing and maintaining positive school culture. PBIS addresses the needs of at-risk students as well as the multi-level needs of all students in regards to behavior. This is a white male teacher telling people that if you use positive behavioral interventions and supports, you are engaged in white supremacy with a hug. You are enforcing white supremacy. Now, why? Why? Well, that's the important part here. What this white male teacher wants you to believe is that if you are a passive learner, you sit there and just listen to the teacher and you're not disrupting the class, well, that's white culture. If you're talking over the teacher and you're disrupting the class, that's actually non-white behavior and is perfectly acceptable. You got that? So this, we get to this all hurts my head, by the way, to even get here, but this is where we are. There have been a group of white people who have advanced the idea that if being on time, treating things objectively, not losing your temper, not talking over others, that's all whiteness. And what happens here is this is unfalsifiable nonsense. You and I would say that being respectful in class, saying yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir, sitting there and listening, not disrupting the class, not talking over the teacher, that that is called good behavior. What this teacher would have you believe is that that is called white supremacy. I would hate for my kid to be in this person's class because what this person is doing is allowing non-white kids to act in ways that are disruptive to the class and let them get away with it if they're not white. Say, well, it's not white culture. And if I make them behave and sit down and be on time, it's white culture. What you're doing is you're causing an entire generation of kids to fail at life. Charlie, I apologize for the phone calls you may be about to get. Several years ago, I filled in for Rush. This was the only moment Bo Snerdly ever had to call me after a program. Oh, my gosh. I was discussing people protesting McDonald's demanding a $15 an hour minimum wage. And I said that if you're standing outside your McDonald's on strike demanding $15 an hour, instead of what they're paying you, you are someone who has failed at life. The amount of hate I got for that was intense. And you know what? The reason Bo Snerdly was calling me was to tell me that they were getting all sorts of complaints from people for me having said that, and he wanted to encourage me to stick to my guns and not feel like I needed to apologize. And I did not apologize. And to this day, I still say that if you're working for $7.25 an hour and you're on strike demanding $15 an hour flipping a burger, you failed at life. What I have become more and more mindful of since then, however, is that oftentimes it's because you had a white teacher who set you up to fail at life by treating you like this guy does. A well-meaning, progressive academic who believes that you should be able to disrupt class, not be on time, not turn your homework in, not use proper grammar, and not believe in objectivity, and that somehow you can be pushed out into the workforce and be given a job. No, you're going to be the idiot who flips burgers because your white teacher thought it would be white supremacy to instill in you good manners and values. And it's unfalsifiable. If I, as a white guy, say, no, 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 you have to turn your work in on time, show your work, and do good work, somehow I'm the bad guy for wanting you to actually do your freaking job. This only works in academia. I'm sorry, but if you are trying to keep trains running and not colliding with each other, and you decide you don't have to worry about things being on time or documenting your work or any sort of objectivity, you're going to cause a train wreck. Your life will be the first train wreck before the real train wreck happens. That's just the reality of the situation. And yet we've got this idea now that largely white people, and you do need to understand, it is largely white teachers, progressives who believe this stuff. It's like the Smithsonian African American Museum did a, hang on, let me pull this up. Smithsonian African American Museum whiteness. I'm Googling the terms. Here we go. Whiteness. Yes, they have a whole section on what whiteness is and white privilege and what you believe and what you think and all of this stuff. It's not actual real stuff. I mean, they quote Robin DiAngelo and other people. The thing you've got to recognize here, though, is that a lot of this stuff has been debunked. It's not really real. And yet they've run with this because other people have run with this and they think it must be a legitimate thing. So here's the chart from the National Museum of African American History at the Smithsonian. These are things that are white culture: rugged individualism, a nuclear family structure, emphasis on the scientific method, history, primarily focused on Western history, the Protestant work ethic, religion, status, power, and authority, a future orientation whereby you believe in delayed gratification or planning for the future. And time, following rigid time schedules, and time being viewed as a commodity, this is all product of white supremacy. It's really not. And the academics who embrace this have been thoroughly discredited, except among the wokes, who have gravitated towards this stuff. Now, why have the wokes gravitated towards this stuff? Because what are some of the criticisms? Nuclear family structure, at a time a lot of people don't have two-parent nuclear household. Therefore, we can say it's white supremacy, so you don't have to follow it, because if you do, you're white supremacist. The emphasis on the scientific method, as more and more kids are failing at Common Core math, who cares about the scientific method anymore? If you're good at it, you must be a white supremacist. If you can build a nuclear rocket, you must be a white supremacist. Pay no attention to the movie about the black ladies at NASA. They clearly were white supremacists ahead of their time if they believed in the scientific method. Absolutely ridiculous nonsense, but this is where we are. The Protestant work ethic. Hard work is the key to success. Work before play. If you didn't meet your goals, you didn't work hard enough. Those things are products of white supremacy. That's what these people believe. It's not true. It is not true. It is not helpful. And it does not help a society if you embrace these things. But a lot of progressives are. A lot of progressive teachers are doing it. And that's the biggest issue and problem here for you to see, is that when you have academics, particularly white uppity high school teachers who are teaching this in the classroom, who are implementing this, your kid is at a disadvantage, but so is the black kid that the teacher thinks he's helping. Because that kid needs a stable environment in order to perform, to work, produce, to learn, just like your kid. And when the white teacher tells the black kid, you don't have to behave in a civilized, normal, non-disruptive way, because to do that means you're a white person, what you're actually telling them is, one, they're outside of mainstream culture, because mainstream culture means you don't disrupt. And two, you're telling that kid somehow you are different from everyone else based on your skin color. And three, you're allowing them to develop bad habits that will harm them in the workplace. You, in other words, are setting them up to fail at life, which means you yourself have failed at life by failing to be a decent teacher, getting kids ready for the workforce and for life after school. This goes back to yesterday, y'all. We've put it on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and the like. You need to prepare yourself to run for office. You need to start thinking about it, because these people have got to be held accountable for ruining an entire generation of American kids based on race, of all things. These people are the real racists, and you should stand up to them. You should also stand up for your values. And there are so many companies right now that are just pooping on your values. There's one company out there that actually is doing a great job standing for your values. It's Patriot Mobile. They're the only Christian conservative cell phone provider in the country. You know, Apple released the new iPhone yesterday. It will be able, you can buy one and you'd be able to put it on Patriot Mobile. You can port your current phone number over. They've got deals for first responders. They've got deals for veterans. They got deals if you got a multi-line household, because you got a lot of older teens who actually do need phones. Well, you know what? Go with Patriot Mobile. You can save some money. You can get free activation with my name, Eric. What you do is you call 972-PATRIOT. And when I say call them, you're going to get a U.S.-based customer service support. 972-PATRIOT. Or you can go online, patriotmobile.com/Eric. PatriotMobile.com/ERICK, or give it a call, 972-PATRIOT. Tell them I send you. Tell them Eric, and they will give you free activation. Roll your phone number over to a company that shares your values and donates a portion of their profits to pro-life causes, Second Amendment causes, and causes for veterans and first responders. Good people, great product, great company, great service. PatriotMobile.com/Eric. Hi there. It is me. It is Eric. You can call in if you want. I will allow it. I don't bite hard. The phone number is 877-973-7425. Y'all, can I just... All right. I don't smoke cigarettes. As you know, I have Sunday nights as bourbon and cigar night. I'll have a cigar. The number of well-meaning people who reach out to me all the time and say, you don't want to, you should stop this. You should give up cigars. You're going to get lung cancer like Rush had. Rush actually got hit. It was genetic. He told me very similar to my wife's. I didn't get it from cigars. Cigar smoke, you don't actually inhale it into your lungs. If you do, you're going to throw up. It's bad. with cigarettes, you inhale it into your lungs. You get lung cancer from cigarettes. They are addictive. There's nicotine in. Nicotine is the addictive property. That's why you have nicotine gum to try to steer people away from cigarettes. A lot of people just want to smoke cigarettes. I think they stink. There are cigars out there that I find really, really odious, but a lot of them I've actually, I've enjoy a good cigar. You know, Rush had it right. The Opus X is fantastic. I like the Fuente God of Fire cigar a ton, and the H. Upman Vintage Cameroon. I just discovered the A.J. Fernandez New World Cameroon wrapper. I like it. If you're new to cigars, get a Cameroon wrapper. It'll serve you well. But the government has decided to raise tobacco taxes. Well, shouldn't say the government has. The Democrats in Washington want to raise tobacco taxes again in order to fund their big spending programs. Now, listen, we can't ban cigarettes. There's this entire effort by the Democrats and progressives now to say, hey, we need you to not go to the hospital if you didn't get vaccinated. You need to die because you're taxing the healthcare system of America. You just die if you get COVID and haven't got a vaccine. The left is taking this position now. But they can't take it with smokers who we know. By consuming this product, you more likely than not are going to have a litany of health problems, from lung cancer to emphysema to God knows what else. And we can't stop you because the entire budget is now propped up on the tax dollars that you are paying. They can't ban cigarettes. This is the most bizarre public health thing to me. We know there is no dispute under the sun scientifically about cigarettes, smoking, and the healthcare fallout from it. And yet you would think the government would say, hey, to save money, we're going to ban cigarettes. But no, 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 no. They actually want people to smoke. They need you to smoke. It is your patriotic duty to get out there, light up a cigarette, and get addicted and die because the government needs you to fund the federal government's tax dollars. It is the most freaking bizarre thing I have seen. State governments around the country are jacking up the tobacco tax. I saw somebody online earlier saying at some point the entire government is going to be funded by a guy named Larry in Kansas and the $752,000 a cigarette he pays in taxes. It's just absolutely bizarre to see the government depending on smokers to keep smoking to fund various government projects long term. It makes no sense whatsoever. And yet this is the world we live in, a nonsensical world fueled by progressive dreams.